So we're going over micro-specialization now. Broke up into three different sections. One is on micro-specialization and how it relates to authority. And then we're going to go over the five irrefutable laws of micro-specialization. And then at the end, we're going to actually refine your own micro-specialization. We're going to go through some exercises so you can determine what your best option is. We're actually going to have some worksheets you guys are going to do after this presentation. So which steak would you want? This is a good analogy I like to use when I first start describing micro-specialization. You've got two options. If you want a steak, and you're just, and I'm sorry if there's any vegans or vegetarians on this call, but I'm from Texas, so I'm using steak as an example here. You can put a green drink in here, whatever else you want to. But you have two options. You can either go to the best steak restaurant in town, or you can go like to a Denny's or an IHOP and get a steak. When you're really craving a steak, which one do you crave? Do you want to go to the place that specializes in it, that does nothing else but steak, or go to the place that does, you know, steak, eggs, French toast, Chinese food, Mexican food, Italian food, sandwiches, burgers, everything else? You're going to want, most likely going to go to the steak restaurant. That is their micro-specialization. A place like Denny's or IHOP, it's not what they do, but they do have a micro-specialization. Theirs is in having a wide variety of food that's, you know, easily available in suburbs, or easily able to get in and get a seat real quick. So it's a very different thing, but when you want a steak, most likely you're going to want that high-quality steak from the steak restaurant. And that's really what micro-specialization is. It's being the steak restaurant of your industry. And I'm going to tell you a story of a band named Wicked Lester. They're from 1972 in New York. They played a blend of rock, pop, folk, and blues. And they were okay. They weren't as good as all bands, but they're better than quite a few. And they just never really took off. Eventually, later that year, they called it quits. And in early 1973, the next year, two of the members decided that the problem was that they were blending in with all the other bands in town. So they moved forward and formed another band, and their singular focus was being so different, so unique, that they had never be compared to a band again. They took off very, very quickly and became one of the biggest, most recognizable rock bands of all time, and still are today. Now, remember, they shut down, and the original Wicked Lester shut down in 72. This band started in 1973. So in those few months, they didn't improve their musicianship at all, and they didn't instantly become better songwriters. All they did different was create a new category. They created their own micro-specialization, and that band is Kiss. So Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley were the two that did that. Again, that was over a few months period of time. They were a band that blended in with every other band in town, until they just made a small change of, I say small change, but actually it became Kiss and put on the makeup and had the theatrics and the comic book tie-ins. They were just like every other band. All they did was change that, and they became great. So this ties into this quote. Ask not what percentage of an existing market your business can own. Ask how large a market you can create by developing your very own micro-specialization and becoming the go-to authority. The next section is the five irrefutable laws of micro-specialization. Number one, the more specialized you get, the more some people will passionately love your message, and the more others will passionately disagree with it. This is just part of a micro-specialization, and basically a law of nature that you cannot have at all. And it's known as the balance of attraction. We're going to go over that right now. See, the balance of attraction is in a bell curve. It shows a mathematical normal distribution. You probably learned this in college. Even some college courses grade on a bell curve. And down here in the small percentage, you got a small percentage that passionately agree with you. You have a small percentage that will passionately disagree with you. And then you have a large majority that just are kind of indifferent about you. They somewhat agree, somewhat disagree with you. But one key thing to know about the passionates is that they're highly emotional. The somewhats and the greater part of the bell curve in this example have a very low emotion. So what's beneficial about having a prospect or a customer in a highly emotional state? Right? They pay the most. People that are emotional buyers by nature, you want people that you're selling to, you want to be able to put them in that emotional state to connect with them that way. These people are, they might pay, but it's going to be a lower price. And so to get these clients, you're going to have to undercharge for your services. And when you undercharge for your services, you're undercharging for yourself, and you're going to get bargain shoppers. Right? And bargain shoppers want to bargain with their own success, and that's why it's even hard to sell when your price is low. And that's a mistake we see so many people making. And I used to be guilty of it myself, is that you think because you aren't selling enough, you have to lower your prices to compete, and you end up getting worse and worse customers. And it's hard to sell. So what we want to do, we want to attract more of the people willing to pay high and repel not only people that don't like your message, but repel all the bargain shoppers too. Right? So how do we do that? We polarize. So you can polarize to shrink the indifference. And remember, the people weren't going to pay much anyway. They were bargain shoppers, and at best, they're going to be clients that are pains in the butt. So don't try to be liked by everyone. Don't try to make your message appeal to everyone. That's being milquetoast, and that sucks. And an example of this, if you think back to 2008 during the presidential election, when McCain and Obama were running against each other, McCain could not be more milquetoast. He was a very liberal or moderate Republican that nobody really liked a lot, but nobody really disliked. He was a war hero, nice enough guy. Nobody really could say anything bad about him. But people weren't, there's nobody, also nobody that was crazy passionate about him. But Obama, on the other hand, was very, very polarizing. People either absolutely loved him or they just absolutely hated him. You wouldn't have heard anybody back in 2008 that said, that Obama character, he's okay. It just didn't happen. And what happened with the election? He won easily each time. He trounced him. And Mitt Romney fell in the same category, did the same thing to him. Now, there's a cost to everything. To create more people that passionately love you and are willing to pay premium prices, it's going to be at the expense of being more people that strongly disagree with your message. And when I'm saying polarizing, I'm not talking about making people angry and saying horrible things about them. I'm talking about when you start to get more and more micro-specialized, you're going to start having your message not appeal to more and more people. And people that just say, I want nothing to do with that at all. And it's not because you're doing it, they hate you. It's because just your message does not resonate with them in any way at all. Law of micro-specialization number two, businesses that solve generic problems will fail because people have specific problems. Right, we have specific pains and want a specific solution. Your customers have a pain that's keeping them awake at night, and they think about it over and over again. Right, it's not something real general like, I need a business coach to get me unstuck, or something like I need to hire a marketing consultant, or I want to make my marriage better. It's not real generic things like that. It's going to be specific things like, I need to find a way to get new clients in the next 30 days, or I'm going to have to shut down my business, or I need to learn how to quit losing my temper and fighting with my wife over stupid stuff, or she's going to leave me. It's specific things like that people are wanting help with. It's not the generic. Example, if you think about like Richard Simmons, we use him as an example a lot when we're talking about micro-specialization because of what he offers. He has a $15 million fitness empire, and he's really never been in shape that I think anybody's ever seen. But he doesn't appeal to the fitness crowd. Right? He doesn't tell people how to get six-pack abs or how to prepare for a marathon or how to get bulging biceps. It's simply about how to get. He appeals to the morbidly obese people usually, of how to finally get them to stop eating so bad, eat a little bit healthier, and start moving just a little bit. And that's his whole market, and he's making a fortune off of it, because those people have a very specific need and a problem, and he's giving them that solution. Law of micro-specialization number three, The most efficient, productive, and powerful way to become an authority is to create a new category. And this is one of my favorite ones. And a category can also be referred to as a niche, or in Texas we say a niche, or marketplace. You can say it all different ways. I'm using category here. It's basically where you can remove yourself from any competition. It's a powerful, powerful place to be. But this does not mean you have to invent something totally new. It's really usually no more than a tweak, or even just adding a new angle to an existing offer out there. A good example of this is Domino's Pizza. Right? Pizza's nothing new. Delivery pizza's nothing new. But once Domino's added that 30-minute guarantee, they created a new category. They created a 30-minute delivery pizza, where if somebody was wanting a quick pizza, who would they call? They'd call Domino's, because there was no other option to call. If somebody wanted a really delicious pizza, they might call the local pizzeria and go pick it up in 20, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, then drive it back home and have a much better tasting pizza. But Domino's didn't care about that. They weren't competing against them. They were competing as people they weren't competing as anybody. They just wanted to create that new category to appeal to people that just wanted that fast pizza. Another example is Mercedes. There were always cars in the U.S. for a long time. When Mercedes entered here, and they became the first luxury car. There was no luxury car market in the U.S. before Mercedes came in. They're the very first one, and that's a huge booming market, and Mercedes is still arguably the leader of it. Why? Because they created it, and they were there first. And we've done the same thing with authority marketing. We didn't invent a new technology. We knew two things very well, internet marketing and branding. So what we did, we combined them in a way no one else was doing, and we created a whole new little niche within the marketing world, and we owned it right from the beginning. We really still do right now. We're very, very far ahead of anyone else, and not because we're smarter, but because we were there first. We created that category. It's a very powerful place to be in. Law of micro-specialization number 4, reduce the essence of your business down to a single thought or attribute. Think about Volvo. What's their word? Safety. Right? If the most important thing when you're buying a new car is safety, you're most likely going to get a Volvo, or at least to be one of them that you consider, because that is what they're known for. They've given up the words of luxury or sporty or sexy or fun or economical. All those you can't use to describe a Volvo. They are about safety. That's it. They've foregone everything else just to be safety. Think about FedEx, overnight delivery. That's the one thing that they are known for. It's not that they leave packages in a beautiful box, or that their delivery people sing to you when they deliver it. It's one thing, they deliver it overnight. And with authority, we did the same thing. The creation of our brand around authority was a very, very purposeful thing. It was something we talked about and planned before we really even started pushing it out there. We decided not to swap between authority, expert, celebrity, leader, or even the guru, or any of the other words that could be applied here. We used one single word all the time, authority, even to the point where it was probably irritating to people on Facebook or on our list sometimes, because we used it so often. But there was a reason behind it. We wanted to own that word. We wanted to have it burned into the subconscious of every person in our reach, so whenever they heard the word, even outside of us using it, they'd be forced to think of us. And it works. And it just, like a couple weeks ago, when we were speaking at an event, we did our presentation first, our presentation the first night, and we hammered the authority thing, authority this, authority that, authority. We had passed out flyers with authority. We had our booth set up with authority. We passed out books with authority. And throughout that event, anytime the main speaker or another speaker, or in the breakout rooms, happened to mention the word authority, they would stop themselves and they'd say, like Brian and Jack talked about. It happened every time. This supports you. If you get down, you own that word, it happens. This happens on Facebook also. I'll have other people that will mention the word in a post, and somebody else that follows us will comment and tag me in it. Or they'll say, hey, this person looks like they're doing the same thing you are. Do you know who they are? So that we have this word just completely owned and burned into the subconscious of every person that listens to us. And it's not a terribly difficult thing to do. And you can do the same things in your business also and own that. Law of micro-specialization number 5, once you are first in a new category, you must demonstrate favorable results quickly. And there's a great example here. One of my favorite businesses is Southwest Airlines. I absolutely love them. They have a little airport near me out here that I can get to quickly, and Jack and I fly Southwest usually fly them all the time. They did the same thing. They entered the airline market, which, I can't think of a more difficult one to jump into than running an airline, but they did it. They created a new category. Theirs was low-cost airfare. Nobody else was doing that. They entered the low-cost airfare thing, and they did everything they could to make themselves totally different. Their planes looked different. They didn't offer meals. They just served peanuts. They could serve, when they first started, I remember they served peanuts. It wasn't even just crackers, and peanuts was for a specific reason, just to look as cheap and low-cost as possible. They also boarded the planes in a completely different way to make themselves look different. It's not Southwest, if you haven't flown Southwest, they don't assign seats. You just get a number when it used to be when you got to the airport. Now it's you get it online, and that's the order you'd walk in on the plane on. It's nothing to do with savings or more efficiency. It's all to do with just being different from everybody else and making themselves stand out. And they got those favorable results quickly. People absolutely loved them. They loved getting the low cost. They had a fun experience on the plane. So they entered the market quickly and got those favorable results. So Southwest did an excellent job of that. So now we're at the first Q&A spot. If people have questions, feel free to jump on and ask. And I'm going to try to pull this little thing over here. Oh, it's right here. It's what I use. One second. All right.
So, if you have any questions specifically about this, let us know, because it is something a lot of you that have the problem. I call it a problem. And the thing is, it's really, you may think it's a gift. Look at all the things I'm able to help people with, but that's where the problem comes in. Is you try to let them know everything that you can do. And when you try to start talking to multiple people about multiple solutions, you dilute your message. In fact, you dilute it, because I can tell you right now, Brian and I could help people with a lot of things outside of what we do with authority. But if we created a big menu of everything that we do, it dilutes the message. Think about this, because when someone is looking towards an authority, they're looking at that person as an expert, right? And when someone is looking for an expert, they're looking for advice. They're not looking for a menu. So if you went to a doctor and you say you wanted cosmetic surgery on, let's say someone wanted a nose job, and you went to a doctor and they said, oh, sure, that's great, I could do a nose job, but also I'm also a podiatrist, and I can fill your I can give you a crown, and if you have a cavity, I can help you with that too. Also chiropractor, I can crack your back if you need that. What does that do to your positioning? So even though you may be able to help people with other things, it's not that you have to neglect helping them with those other things, but make sure that when you're putting out messages, and we'll talk about this when we talk about being the educator and advocate and content creation, you want to make sure that you're being very specific and talking to a single person about a problem and a solution that is very specific to them to be that authority. Let's see, another question.
Yeah, Fatima had one about, she said, do we take a thesaurus and look up all the words that connect to our niche? You can certainly do that. It really depends. You can even make up words. And really, authority marketing was something that we just kind of really created also. But there's other examples, ones that just have completely, either created their own words or combined words that really did not exist out there. But certainly a good way would be to use that thesaurus and find out what's find out some early trends in your market, because the authority thing was starting to trend when we started this. We're starting to see that word a little bit more, but we just went after it really hard. So if there's something you see that's just starting to be adopted by the early adopters and innovators, you can jump on board with that.
Yeah, if you think about this, who'd be looked at as authority? Who would be someone that someone would be interested in interviewing for a podcast, interviewing for a TV, reading a specific book, a Kindle on? Would it be someone that says, I am a fitness coach, I'm a personal fitness coach? Or is it someone that says, I help new mothers quickly get back into the physical condition that they think they want to get in after their pregnancy, right? Which one of those do you think would be more interested in specific? And this is no judgment call. You know, women that just had babies are beautiful. Don't get me wrong. All right. But think about that. Which one would it, because the person that says, oh, I'm the fitness instructor, but I can help other people. I can help people that are overweight. I can help people that are been out of shape for a while. I can help people that are in shape that just want to get better. Well, that's right. You can help a lot of people, but which one are you going to be an authority in? Does that make sense? And you may have a different message or a different kind of a funnel or authority funnel for each one of those, but you want to make sure that you don't dilute those when you are putting that message out there or who you're speaking with. And you definitely get a different understanding. But what you should do right now for the micro specialization, and understand that this is not saying to neglect or ignore these others, but think about this. Who are the people that you have the most passion around helping? Who are the people that are the most profitable for you to help? Who are the ones that are seem to be the best clients for you to have?
Yeah, and we'll go over that in the next section. Also, I'm getting specifics how to do this stuff yourself. So if the question about how to do this for yourself, just hang on, because I'm about to go over that. We're gonna go through a step-by-step process to